From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with an episode of Order in the Court. This was a syndicated courtroom drama series from the early 1950s. This particular episode, in my opinion, is very reflective of the attitudes, morals, and values that were held by most people in the early 50s. But you could also tell that things were starting to change in American society, particularly when it came to a woman's place in a marriage. Judge for yourself as we listen to episode 10 in the series, released for syndication March 26, 1953. It's called The Case of the Unfaithful Wife.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you from the corridor in the courthouse. In just a few moments, we'll enter the courtroom for today's case of Order in the Court.
Live in New York City?
Yes, Your Honor. In a little three-room apartment uptown.
You're married?
Yes, sir. I have two children, a boy 6 and a little girl 5.
What's your business?
I've got a little restaurant uptown. I used to be a hacker. Then I had a little fleet of cabs. Well, maybe not a fleet. I controlled 8 cabs. But that business got smashed up. I had a little left out of the crash, about $1,300. And so I bought a half interest in this restaurant.
All right. What's your problem?
Well, you see, it's like this, Your Honor. When I was going pretty good with my cabs, I was down to see a lawyer one day, and there was a girl working for him. Well, she and I went for one another at first sight. Inside of 3 months, we got married. Then came the ups and downs, but we weathered them okay. Until one day, about 2.5 months ago, I came home from the restaurant in Myrtle. That's my wife. Well, we were sitting in the living room and she tells me she's got some news for me. All right, honey. What is the news?
I'm going out tomorrow and look for a job, Dad.
Oh, no. That's not news. That's a pipe dream.
You think so?
You know darn well it is.
Well, I told you that I'm going out tomorrow and look for a job.
Oh, stop it, Murph. Don't talk foolish.
It isn't foolish, Dad. I'm serious. I've made up my mind, so you might just as well get used to the idea.
Yeah? What's brought this on, honey?
Well, I've been thinking about it for some time.
And you didn't think it was important enough to talk to me about?
What good would it have done? I've heard your views on the subject enough to know what you'd say.
I get you. My views are all wet.
About this, they are, honey. Oh, don't quarrel with me about it, Dan.
You've decided you married a washout, and you want to rub it in.
You have to be like that, Dan. You know that isn't true.
All right. Suppose I haven't been a howling success. Suppose I haven't lived up to what I promised you. A big apartment on Riverside Drive and a limousine. Is it my fault? Did I lie to you when I told you I was going places? I was going places, wasn't I? I'd have got there if they hadn't ganged up on me and pushed me to the wall.
All right, Dan, all right.
No, it isn't all right. I worked to build up that hack business, didn't I? I had it going great. 8 cabs I had out. And I was about ready to sit on top of the world. Then the big shots step in and crucify me.
Nobody's blaming you for that, Dan.
I can't get near a station or a hotel or a ferry landing. And they sideswipe my cabs on the street. Well, how do you expect one guy to fight 1,000? Or a few $1,000 to fight millions? If they'd left me alone, you'd have had your apartment. You'd have had a limousine. I had diamonds and a mink coat, too.
All right, honey. Now, quiet down, will you?
Oh, well, it's...
I know what happened, and I know it wasn't your fault. Did I ever once say it was?
No, you were swell, Mert. You know I think that.
Well, I stuck with you, didn't I? I didn't complain when we had to live those 3 months in that awful skylight room.
I know. I know. You took it on the chin like a champion, honey. Oh, but this talk of going to work, right when I'm all set to make a comeback... Oh, Mike, you can't do it. Now, that's all there is to it. It ain't just you and me any longer. We've got the kids in there. They're growing up. We need you, Myrtle. Why do you think I kept on plugging when the brakes went against us?
The brakes are still against us, Dad. The brakes are against them.
Now, that's not true, Myrtle. We're managing to keep our heads above water. If the parting ain't so hot, I'll admit that, but then there's worse. You give me another 2 years, and I'll be making good money with that restaurant. Then maybe I can open another one. Maybe someday I'll have a whole chain of them.
And have the big boys push you to the wall again?
I get it. You've lost confidence in me. You think I'm a pushover. Just a little shop with big ideas.
Oh, stop it, Dad. Did I say anything like that? You know darned well I didn't. I couldn't say anything like that because I don't believe it. Why don't you ever try looking at things from my point of view? Just once, Dad. Here we are, married 7 years, and we're worse off than when we started out.
Oh, yeah? I guess the kids don't count.
Certainly the children count, and it's them as much as myself I'm thinking about. Is this all you want for them when they grow older?
I'm going to give them better than this, I've told you.
But you can't be sure, Dan. And in the meantime, what are we to do for clothes?
I'll give you all I can, Mert.
And that isn't very much, Dan. Oh, be sensible, honey. I've been patient. I've never grumbled or complained. But wake up, Dan. We're getting old, you and I. I've fulfilled a woman's obligations. I've had 2 children. I've nursed them, slaved for them, stayed at home with them. All right. Now I'm entitled to something for myself before I die. Some decent clothes, some friends, some parties. Look at me. Shabby. Lines beginning to come in my face. My eyes getting dull and tired. I tell you, I'm not ready for that. I'm going to get a job whether you like it or not. I was before we got married, and I guess I can do it again.
Hello? Yeah, she's here. It's for you.
Oh. Hello? Oh, hello, Eve. Yeah. Yeah, I got it. Sure. Sure, tomorrow. I'll stop by your place in the morning and get the dress. 8 o'clock be all right? Sure. Oh, all right. Bye.
What was that part about the dress?
She said she'd lend me one.
You've been lying to me, Myrtle, haven't you? You've already got a job.
Yes, sir.
Where?
At a dress shop on 58th Street, as if in August.
What about the children? Who's going to take care of them?
Marie down the hall said she'd look after them. I'll have to pay her $5 a week.
How much salary are they paying you?
$25 a week.
I see. Well, I'll be going on back down to the restaurant. Good night.
Good night.
Little apartment you got here, sis.
Well, it's about time we had something a little better.
Yeah, I know.
Where have you been keeping yourself for the last 6 months?
Oh, trying to make a go of that restaurant.
You're succeeding?
Well, it's fair. Listen, sis, what I came over to see you about today was, well, you reckon that husband of yours could make me a loan? $1,000?
Oh, Dan, you know he can't.
Well, I just thought maybe. Well,
that bank he had his money and only paid off 50 cents on the dollar. Of course, they say we'll get some more eventually, but I wouldn't want to make a bet on it. Of course, Joe's got a pretty good job now, but, well, you know how it is. He hasn't got anything laid by.
Okay, sis.
What do you want for the $1,000, Dad?
Well, this partner of mine's willing to sell me his half of the business, if I can give him cash. I'd like to do it, too. Because I think if I could run things my way, I could make more money. I gotta make more money.
Myrtle gonna have another baby, Dad?
No, it's not that. She's gone to work. Started 2 weeks ago.
Oh, well, why not, Dan?
Because I don't like it.
Who's taking care of the children?
Some dumb girl that lives in the building. Of course, I don't think she'd kill either one of the kids. Intentionally, that is. She's about as intelligent as this chair I'm sitting in.
Where's Myrtle working?
She's secretary for some guy named Langley. He's got a dress shop down on 58th Street.
Oh, yes, I know it. I can't afford to buy anything there, but it's an awfully smart shop.
Well, I don't care what it is. I wish she'd cut it out and stay home.
I know.
Well, I gotta run, sis. Gotta get back to the restaurant. Maybe I can get some banker, something to advance me the dough.
I wish you luck.
Thanks, sis. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, now look, Carson. I haven't been able to raise that cash yet, but I think maybe another month or two I can swing it.
All right, Dan. The offer's still good.
Thanks. And here's my proposition. You give me a sort of an option on your half for 2 months, and let me start running the show my way for that length of time.
Yeah? What do you want to do?
Well, it's like this, Carson. I think we've been trying to make this place too much of a clash joint.
Yeah?
Sure. Trying to shoot for the wrong kind of clientele. Now, here's my idea. I'd like to forget all about the family trade. Go for a lot of business.
Meaning just what?
Just this. Now, you see, I'm an ex-hacker.
All right.
Hackers have to eat, and they know good substantial food. No fancy prices, mind you. But you get hackers going to a place for coffee and hamburgers, and you can bet your bottom dollars there's a reason. Now, if we can start specializing on hamburgers and beef stew,
mm-hmm.
No cheap meat in it either,
mm-hmm.
But the best, I've got a hunch we can double our intake before a month's out. And I can get them started coming here. I know plenty of them. And if we produce what they like, they'll be sending others. Well, what do you say?
I don't know, Dan. Let me think it over till tomorrow.
Okay. And if you want to, go take a look at that place on 110th Street. See the kind of business they're getting.
Okay. Might not be a bad idea.
That's a swell idea. You'll see it is. Well, if it's oak with you, I'm going to knock off and go home for a little evening visit with the family for a change. I'll be back around 10 or 10:30.
All right, Dan. See you later.
Look at Emily. Daddy, she fell down.
I did not. You pushed me.
Daddy, come on and play with us.
Marie.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't my wife give you any idea of what time she'd be home?
No, sir. She just said she had to work late and for me to give Billy and Emily their supper.
Oh, come on and play with us, Daddy.
Why does Mother have to work late, Daddy?
I don't know, Emily.
I bet when I grow up, I won't work late.
Here, Emily, catch this.
Oh, huh? Stop it, Billy. Stop doing things at me. Daddy, make him stop it.
Stop it, Billy.
Oh, I wasn't doing anything. Stop looking out the window, Daddy, and come and play with us.
Marie.
Yes, sir.
Has my wife ever asked you before to give the children their supper because she had to work late?
Yes, sir. Once.
When was that?
Last week.
I see.
Read me a story, Daddy.
No, not now, Emily. Oh, Marie, take the children back to their rooms and put them to bed.
Yes, sir.
Oh, no, Daddy.
Is Mother coming, Daddy?
Yeah, she's coming in the building now. Come on, you run along with Marie. Your mother will come in later and tell you good night. Come on now, run, the both of you.
I don't want to go to bed.
Come on.
I don't
want to
go.
Oh, hello, Myrtle.
What on earth are you doing home this time of night?
I just thought I'd like to have a little visit with my family for a change.
Well, where are the children?
I just sent them back to their room. Marie's putting them to bed.
I see. Well, this is quite a surprise.
Who was it drove you home in that $1 million car?
Oh, well, that was Mr. Langley.
Yeah?
Well, now, you needn't act like that about it.
Act like what? I just said yeah.
That wasn't what you were thinking. Why shouldn't he have driven me home? I had to work late, so he took me to dinner and then brought me home in his car.
Well, is this the first time?
Well, no. Took me to a movie one night last week. To the Capitol. So what? I suppose you think you're the injured husband.
Now listen, Myrtle. We've always played fair with each other. There's been no cheating. I don't want you to let this Langley guy bring you home anymore.
Oh, don't be silly, Dan. Mr. Langley's a gentleman. He's been very kind to me.
Yeah? Listen, honey. I didn't drive a hack all those years for nothing. I know harmless birds like him are.
Oh, stop talking like that, will you? I believe you're jealous.
Well, it don't matter what I am or what I'm not. Just don't let that guy start taking you out.
You're really so silly, honey. I'm going in and see that the children get to bed.
Okay. I'm going back to the restaurant before I start smashing things. Hey, sounds pretty good in there, don't it, Carson?
Yeah, I guess you had the right idea, Dan.
I'll say I did. Well, I'm going to walk out on you for a little while.
Yeah? What's up?
Oh, I got a little personal business to attend to down on 58th Street.
Hmm. Not a banker?
No, something else. But I'm going to get it, Carson. Don't you forget that. This joint's going to belong to me.
Okay, fella. That's okay by me. I want to go out west.
Of this truck?
So what's it to you?
Ah, you got me wrong, buddy. I ain't looking for no fight. I'm looking for a job.
Oh, well, don't go looking for mine. It's too tough finding another.
Yeah, you said it. How long you been driving that truck for Langley?
Oh, about a year now.
They don't need another driver, do they?
No, not just now they don't.
How is he? Pretty good to work for?
Oh, sure, he's okay.
Yeah? What sort of a guy is he?
Oh, you know, one of these big shots, plenty of jack, likes to play around. He's a good spender, they say.
Yeah? Maybe I could get a job chauffeuring for him.
Ah, he's had the same guy for 10 years.
Yeah? How old a guy is he?
Oh, about 50, I guess.
Married?
Renovated. He's doing a single right now.
I get you. Well, I'll stop by again one day next week. If anything turns up, keep me in mind, will you?
Okay, buddy, but don't count on nothing.
No, I won't.
Have to wake me up for?
Well, I just got in. I want to talk to you.
Oh, go to bed. I've got to get my sleep, Dan.
Well, before you go back to sleep, where'd you get that new dress hanging out in the closet?
Oh, go to bed.
You didn't buy that dress, Michael. I'm not that dumb. Nobody buys dresses like that on any $25 a week salary.
You're awfully smart, aren't you?
Well, a lot smarter than you seem to think here lately. Now, I'm willing to skip this dress business if you'll take it back in the morning to the guy that gave it to you. And tell him you're through working in his place.
Have you lost your mind?
I don't intend to lose it, Michael.
No? Well, stop jumping to conclusions. That dress was one that had been modeled and gotten soiled. Well, Mr. Langley asked me if I'd like to have it. You think I'm sap enough to say no?
You're going to be wise enough to take it back to
I'll
him.
I'll do no such thing, Dan.
No man's going to give my wife any clothes.
Stop acting like a child. I'm going to keep that dress and I'm going to wear it. And if you don't like it, it's just too bad. When you make enough out of your dinky little restaurant to pay for dresses like that one, then you can come around and preach, but not before.
Is that so?
It most certainly is. Who is it bought our children new outfits these last 6 weeks? Not you. And their clothes weren't given to me either, mister. I worked for those clothes, earned the money to buy them with, and not 1 cent did I ask you for. So go to bed.
Myrtle, if you don't take that dress back to Langley in the morning, I will. That dress is still here when I get up tomorrow. I'll see that he gets it back. And he'll be lucky if I don't cram it down his throat in the bargain.
Oh, you make me tired. I'm not going to argue with you any longer.
Well, you heard what I said.
Oh, go to sleep.
To sleep. To sleep. Say, do you know whether or not my wife took a dress with her when she went to work this morning?
Yes, sir. She said tell you she took it.
Okay. Well, take good care of the children, Marie.
Yes, sir.
All right, I took the dress back, didn't I?
You're darn right you did.
Well, now, don't still be cross about it, because I'm going to tell you just how badly you misjudged Mr. Langley.
I didn't misjudge that old goat. I know plenty about him.
Oh, stop it, Dan. Do you know what he said when I took the dress back and told him you wouldn't let me accept favors like that?
I can imagine what he said and just how he said it.
Well, now, that's where you're wrong. You can't. He said he was terribly sorry you misunderstood his intentions, that he thought you'd rather like for people to be kind to your wife.
Oh, yeah? That's just too sweet, ain't it?
All right, he meant it, too. And then we got to talking about you. And I told him how hard you were working and what a tough break you'd had with your cab. And how you were so anxious to buy out Carson.
So he broke down and cried, I guess.
Well, he became very interested and said he'd like to help you along.
Oh, yeah? I'm not going to like what's coming.
No? Well, he said he'd be glad to lend you the $1,000.
I knew it. I knew it. I hope you told him what he could do. That he could take his lousy $1,000.
Will you stop it?
Listen, you may be blind or dumb or both, but I'm not. You think I'm crazy, Myrtle?
When somebody wants to help you and you won't let them, it begins to look like it.
And why does he want to help me? Why does he offer me $1,000? Does he think that's all you're worth? Why didn't you slap him in the face? What are you? Just a 5 and 10 cent store bargain? Just a cheap little tramp? Oh, Myrtle. Myrtle, what's happened to you? What's changed you? I don't want to say anything I'll be sorry for, Myrtle, but... Oh, but you and I, honey, we're standing on the edge of a precipice.
Well, if we are, whose fault is it?
I wish I knew.
It's your stupid jealousy and suspicions and false pride.
No. No, it isn't, Myrtle.
Mr. Langley didn't say he'd give you the money. He said lend it.
If you mention that again, I'll slap you.
All right. All right, Dad. Time you went on down to your restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is. Okay.
Homer, you done
it? I've done it, Myrtle. I own the restaurant. We just signed the papers. The banks gave me a loan this afternoon.
Oh, that's swell, then.
Well, can't you do any better than that? I thought it sort of called for a celebration. Dinner and a show.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's out of the question tonight.
Yeah? Well, look, Myrtle. Here's our chance, honey. You can quit your job now. I'll forget all the fights we ever had. You forget everything I've said, and let's start out all over again. We'll bury these last 2 months. Oh, please, Myrtle. Look at me. Let's celebrate tonight.
I told you I can't dance.
No? Why not?
Well, I've got a date.
I see.
No, you don't see. I'm going out with Eve and some friends of hers to the movies.
Oh.
Well, don't you trust me?
Sure, honey. Don't put it like that. Sure, I trust you. Go ahead.
I won't be out for very late. Are you going to stay home?
Yeah. As long as I've taken the night off, I'll stay here and play with the kids and then listen to the radio.
All right. Night.
Good night.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, kid.
Where's Mother gone?
Daddy doesn't know, Emily. Daddy wonders if he knows anything at all.
Be up, Dan.
Yeah, still up.
Come on in, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan, this is Mr. Langley.
How do you do? Hello.
Sit down, Jim.
Why is this man in my house?
Well, now, please.
Why is this man in my house?
Don't start any dramatics, Dan. He's come to tell you that I'm leaving.
Till death do us part.
Oh, stop it, Dan. Mr. Langley and I love each other. You and I, We made a mistake, Dan. Let's admit it and end it. Jim and I are going to sail for Paris tomorrow. We'll get the divorce there.
Yes, and everything will be arranged very pleasantly, old man. I've made out a check to amply provide for the children until we come back.
Of course, Bill. Expect you to agree to share the children with me. 6 months with us and 6 with you.
Surely that's fair, isn't it? Oh, come now. Be decent, old man. Your wife's been extremely fair. She didn't want to deceive you. That's why we're here. You surely want to meet her halfway, don't you? We can meet these situations like decent, intelligent people.
Decent. Get out of here before I kill you. Get out. Get out. If you leave with this man, Myrtle, you'll never see either of your children again. Get out. Get out before I kill you.
Postponed their trip to France. Myrtle moved to a hotel. They have my final answer. Should I change it, Your Honor? Should I let her have her divorce and share the children with her? Thank you.
My dear sir, briefly, here is my advice. Let your ultimatum stand. If your wife wishes to give up her children and obtain an ethically fraudulent divorce in Paris, that is her privilege. Surely if she can do that, you and she never could have found a real happiness together. There is tragedy for you, yes, and the children. But the world will never be free from tragedy. That is my advice.
We are once again talking to you from the corridor as the courtroom is emptying. We hope that you'll join with us again when we return for the next session. Order in the court.
You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And you can find much more info about the show, including detailed program playlists and streaming audio, by visiting our blog and website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you want the playlist or audio for this episode, look for Upstate Radio Theater program number 1805. We have a bit of music and comedy to wrap up this hour of old-time radio, as we have an episode of Texaco Town, obviously sponsored by the Texaco Gasoline Company. The series aired on CBS in the mid-1930s and starred the great comedian and singer Eddie Cantor. This broadcast, program number 5 in the series, originally aired on CBS October 18th of 1936. It's called Putting Texaco on the Map.
Good evening. Welcome to Texaco Town. And again, the 45,000 dealers who serve you with Fire Chief gasoline and other Texaco products present His Honor the Mayor, that well-known dancer, Eddie Cantor.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Hooper. Still dancing?
Yes, sir. Since I made a hit as a dancer last Sunday on the program, I've created a new dance called the Republican Democratic Swing. Look, la da da da.
Eddie, you're having trouble with your knee.
Yeah, that's why it's called the Republican Democratic Swing. They keep knocking each other.
Well, I suppose you think you've got the other dancers worried.
Well, Jimmy, that's their lookout. If there are other dancers who can't do my sensational taps, then it's no... Oh, come in.
Hello, Eddie.
Hello, what are you doing here?
Eddie, you know why I'm here.
What?
Please, you've got to stop, do you hear me? You're taking the food out of my children's mouths. My husband will lose his job. Eddie, for my sake, please don't do it anymore.
All right, I'll quit. I give you my word.
Thanks so much. Bless you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Who's that, Eddie?
Mrs. Fred Astaire. They're worried. I don't know. You know, Jimmy, honestly, maybe I'd better give up dancing, don't you think?
Well, you should. To me, dancing is the lowest form of art for a man.
Mm-hmm.
Only a sissy would take up dancing.
Yeah, only... I'll get it. Hello?
A man dancing.
Yes? Yeah, you can't? All right, I'll tell him. Goodbye. Goodbye. It was for you, Jimmy.
For me?
Yeah, Eleanor Powell says she can't give you a dancing lesson until Friday. Only a sissy would take up dancing.
Well, you understand, don't you? It's one of those...
Yeah, Jimmy, why don't you admit it? You're not fooling anybody.
All right, Eddie, I'll confess. I am taking lessons, but it's not my fault.
No?
Jack Renard made me go with him.
Jack Renard? Don't tell me that blimp is taking dancing lessons.
Yeah. Heel and toe went one thing brush you can't expect. Three. Heel and toe went brush to three. Heel and toe and brush
wait
to
a minute.
Three. Heel and toe and brush to three.
Wait a minute, Renard, what are you doing?
I'm practicing my first lesson.
Yeah, what in the world ever made you take up dancing?
Well, every time I went to a dance, I was a wallpaper. I mean a wallflower.
Yeah, wallpaper was right. You're big enough to cover any wall.
Show him the first lesson, Jack.
Yeah, show it.
Heel and toe and brush two, three.
Look at Jack, look at you've done it four times with the right leg. Try it once with the left leg.
The left leg?
Yeah, you know which is your left leg, don't you?
Sure, the fat one.
The fat one. The fat one. I suppose the right leg is just a twig from a giant redwood.
Oh, jealous.
Yeah, look, fellas, I'll give you instructions. Absolutely free. Follow me. Now, all together. Heel and toe and one, two, three. Heel and toe and brush, two, three. Heel and toe and
bump, two, three. Heel and toe and bump, two, three. Heel and toe and bump, two, three.
Yeah, wait a minute. Wait, stop. It's not bump, two, three. It's brush, two, three. You're not dancing. You're moving around like a boat in a storm.
A boat. Swish, swish, slap, slap. Swish, swish, slap.
Wait a minute. Stop. That was last week. You were a boat going across.
Well, this week I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Swish, swish, slap, slap.
I never saw such a clumsy ox in all my life. Now follow me, will you? Here
and... Let me take it. Yeah. Hello? Yes? Oh, yes. Yes, I'll give him the message. Goodbye.
What is it, Jimmy?
The Chamber of Commerce wants you to cut out this dancing and start putting Texaco Town on the map.
Okay, I'll sing the mayor of Texaco Town. Jack, do your stuff.
Heel and toe and...
No. No, music! You know how I try to, I'd give my right eye to put Texaco Town on the map. Each week I keep singing, new verses I'm bringing, and writing this song is no snap. Though each verse may not be too bright, here is the first one tonight. Oh, at a Texaco station, two kids on vacation stood sobbing with tears falling down. I said, kids, who kicked you? They said, we're scared by that picture.
Who's?
The mayor of Texaco Town. Once at a bridge party, a man's wife said, smarty, you're playing this game like a clown. He thought he held wind cards, now he's wearing shin guards.
Ooh.
The mayor of Texaco Town. To make your selection in the next election, just watch how I put my vote down. Good sense I'm not lacking, there's one man I'm backing.
Ooh.
Roosevelt. Land, Lemke, Parker, the mayor of Texaco Town.
Well, Tanner,
yep.
You know, I think that song is all right.
Yep.
But that alone won't put Texaco Town on the map.
Well, Jimmy, what will do it?
Well, let me tell jokes.
Mm-hmm.
What this program needs is a comedian.
Comedian?
Yeah.
What am I? What am I?
Heel, toe, and brush, two, three.
Stop it, Jack. Wallington, I'll give you a chance to tell a joke, but it must be brand new.
Now, here's a joke that's never been told before.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, I begin by saying, Eddie, my next-door neighbor has a midget son.
Hey. Jimmy, that's the funniest thing I ever heard of.
No, I'm not through yet.
Yeah, you're through, Jimmy. You're through.
Oh, listen, give me a chance, will you? I say to you, Eddie, my next-door neighbor has a midget son.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, that's strange.
Well, what's so strange about having a midget son?
Can you do it?
Yep. Oh, so those are the jokes you're going to tell, huh? Jokes like that neighbor's midget son will take this town off the map.
All right, you think of something.
I've got a way to publicize Texaco Town, Jimmy. Take a letter.
Yes, Mayor, to whom?
To all the automobile owners everywhere.
Shoot.
In this town of Texaco, I'm the mayor, as you know, and there isn't too much time for me allotted.
Got it.
So I'm dropping you this line, because I know you're friends of mine, and you'll appreciate this letter when you spot it.
Got it.
When you buy your gasoline for your motor cars, I mean, and you know how their appetites need sating.
Waiting.
Cars with high compression motors owned by many sons and daughters. I've got five, that is daughters. Heaven bless them.
Yes, sir.
You'll find they work much better if you'll only heed this letter and fill them up, the cars I mean, with Texaco Fire Chief gasoline. From dirt and motor knocks you're free, then you'll enjoy your Sunday spree. Yours sincerely, Eddie C.
Eddie?
Yep.
Eddie, I'll grant you that's clever.
Yep.
But to be sure that everybody gets the point, let me add this. Without rhyme, but with plenty of reason.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
There's a reason why more tourists use Fire Chief than any other gasoline. A reason why leading bus companies such as Greyhound and many others to whom gasoline is an important item choose Fire Chief. It's the way it's made. Fire Chief is emergency-grade gasoline, originally developed for fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency vehicles. Yet, it sells everywhere at no extra price. Fire Chief puts lightning action in your engine, and that means quicker starting, smoother, more dependable power. And because you shift gears less often, you get more enjoyment with Fire Chief and save money.
Jimmy, that's fine, but there is still another reason. And I don't want to flatter you, but people are telling me that they like to buy at your station and other Texaco stations, too, because of the men that run them. They give such agreeable, friendly service.
That's nice of you to say that, Eddie.
Jimmy, that's not just free air. I really mean it. And from coast to coast, you Texaco dealers are all right.
Jack Renard's next selection is dedicated to the Young Men's Christian Association, who recently voted a certain gentleman you know as their favorite comedian. I just got another call from the Chamber of Commerce. They want action.
Well, what can we do? You know, Jimmy, a town can become famous if they produce one great man.
Mm-hmm.
A man as big as Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, a man as great as Lindbergh.
Somebody paging me?
Pop your talking!
Boy, you can stop worrying.
Yep.
The minute when I'm elected president, I'm going to put this town on the map.
How?
I'm going to change the whole money system.
You're crazy. First you wanted to change the map, and now you want to change the money system?
Yeah, that's my new slogan. Park your caucus for a change.
Yep. What do you know? What do you know about money anyhow?
Plenty. I used to work in the mint.
You worked in the mint? What was your salary?
I paid them $50 a week. But it was worth it.
Yep. Yeah, all right. As long as you're changing the money, have you got any plans to stop the counterfeiters?
Sure. I'm going to make everybody who works in the mint cover up their shoes.
Cover up their shoes?
Yeah, so nobody could counterfeit.
Yep. God.
Besides, nobody could make money from the mint.
No?
Because I'm going to make all the workers there put up a $2 deposit.
Oh, if you make them put up a $2, they can't take a $2 deposit. Suppose a man steals $5,000.
Then he loses his deposit.
Yep.
And if he loses his deposit three times, he's fired.
Oh, that'll teach him a lesson. Oh, sure. By that time, he's only got half the money in the United States Treasury.
Yeah, but he could never get the other half.
Why not?
Because Europe has got it.
Yep. But, Parky, you still haven't told me how you're going to change the money system.
Well, first thing, instead of the bull on the nickel,
yep.
I'm going to put on a cow.
A cow? Why?
That's another way of milking the public.
Yep. Oh, I see. And are you going to change the paper money?
No, only the silver.
Yep.
I'm going to change the pictures on both sides of the quarters.
You mean you're going to remove the eagle and liberty?
Yeah, and in their place, I'm going to put there two pictures of Barney Google.
Wait a minute. You can't make a quarter with two Barney Googles.
Why not? You made $1 million with two Popeyes.
Yep.
That guy's no help.
No, but Jimmy, I've got something now that will really do good for our town. Bobby, come out here. Come out.
Hello, Daddy.
Look, son, you can be a big help to us tonight. I want you to sing the title song from the new picture you're making, Rainbow on the River. Will you do it?
I'd love to.
Ladies and gentlemen, with this song, we salute the city of New Orleans, the locale of Rainbow on the River.
There's a rainbow on the river. The skies are clearing. You'll soon be hearing a heavenly song all the day long. When there's a rainbow on the river, the birds are mating. They're busy dating each other above, happy in love. Let you and I go sailing along the rippling stream, holding hands together.
Romance.
Well, Bobby, now we're really getting someplace.
Say, wait a minute. I got a great idea, Reddy Copperhead.
Copperhead? Wait a minute. A copperhead is the worst kind of a poisonous snake.
I don't believe it. Go ahead and bite me.
Yep. Go away from me. Stop wasting my time, Pop, you carcass. We have to find an idea that will send Texaco Town right to the pinnacle.
I'm sorry. I only play poker.
Nope. I said pinnacle. You're thinking of pinochle. Knuckle.
Who's Oldero?
Yep. Pop, you carcass. We've got to do something tonight that is absolutely different.
Wait a minute, Eddie. Why don't you do a sketch like you did last week?
You mean like Dodsworth?
Yeah, but I don't think it's fair for you always to be the star.
Say, Jimmy Washing Board is right.
Yeah?
Everybody's got to have a fair chance to be the star.
Look, I don't want to be the star, boys. In fact, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put all the parts in this hat, and everybody will pick a part.
Okay.
Let me go first.
Go ahead. All right, all the parts are written on little pieces of paper, see? And they're in the hat. Did you take one part, you carcass?
Yeah.
Read the name of the part that you play.
6 and 7/8.
Yep. Put that back. That's the hat size.
Oh, I thought it was the name of the play.
Oh, come on, fellas. Cut out the kidding, will you? The Chamber of Commerce is listening.
All right, now let's start the sketch. I want everybody to pick a part out of the hat now.
All right, I got mine.
Here's mine.
I'm all set.
Well, I've got mine. Now, wait a minute. There's still one part left over. Come on, now.
Okay, Daddy. I'll take it.
Bobby, what are you doing here? I thought you went home.
I want to be in the sketch, too. I've got friends listening in.
You have friends listening in at this hour? Why, they're all asleep.
Simone goes to bed at 8 o'clock.
All right. You take this last part.
Okay.
Now, look. Nobody looks at their parts until the sketch begins. We're going to start. The scene opens in the house of Prince Dubonnet. The prince's grandmother is sitting before the fire knitting and talking to herself. All right. Whoever plays the grandmother, start the talk. Come on.
Oh, fiddlesticks. Yep. I drop another stick.
Yep.
Say, Eddie Scranton, this is a sissy part. I don't want it.
Wait a minute. Park your carcass. Listen. You play the part that you picked out of the hat. Now start again.
All right. Oh, stiddlefix. I drop another stitch. I wonder where this could be my little grandson, Oscar.
Oh. Here I am, Grandma. Here I am.
Oh, Oscar. Come here, my baby. Do you be daffy about your grandma?
Gee, Grandma, what a big dialect you got.
What's that, Renard? What are you doing?
Well, I picked out the part of a cat.
Part of a cat? You look more like the part of a horse.
Oh, leave me alone.
Meow! Meow! Meow!
Listen, Oscar, my little succotash.
What is it, Grandma?
Put out the cat outside and give him some honey.
You mean milk, Grandma?
No, honey, you got to sweeten up that sour push.
Yep. All right, scat! Scat!
Meow, 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 meow!
What happened?
His tail got caught in the door. Look. Hey, Grandma, I'm hungry. Will you call the butler?
All right. Hey, butler.
Yep. Begging your pardon, madam, did you ring?
Yes, Jeeves. Get the prince some grub.
Very well, madam. Shall I get him a bit of a crumpet?
Crumpet? He don't want music. He wants something to eat.
It's cold in here, Grandma. Why don't we have a fire?
Yes, Jeeves, make a fire. You hear me? Make a fire, Jeeves.
Fire, Jeeves, the best gasoline you can put in your car. Fill up your tank today.
Go ahead, Jeeves. You could borrow some wood from the next-door neighbors.
Yes, madam. By the way, did you notice that our next-door neighbor has a midget son?
Again with that joke? Get out of here, Jimmy, and bring back some food, will you?
Meow, meow, meow. I'm hungry, too.
All right, give him a hunk of salami, will you? Say, Grandma, where is Grandpa? I haven't seen him all day.
Well, here comes Grandpa now. Boy, don't you look old.
Oh, yes, look. It's Bobby Breen with a beard. Looks like Santa Claus, Grandpa.
Hello, my grandson. Oh.
What's the matter, Grandpa?
It's my rheumatism again.
That must be the neighbor's midget son.
Meow.
I never heard so much noise in all my life.
What is it?
Wait a minute, everybody. Wait a minute. Let's stop the whole sketch.
What happened, Eddie?
You know who is playing the cat, don't you?
Yes, Renard.
Well, the cat just had kittens. Look.
You've been writing Mayor Cantor for Dust Off That Old Piano, and here it is.
Susanna. Dust off that old piano. My hands are reaching for those keys. Our troubles will go winging the moment we start singing all our favorite melodies. Let's get the gang around that used to hang around. And when the neighbors hear me singing tenor, they'll forget about Cantor and Penner. Oh, Susanna, I let you sing soprano. Dust off that old piano tonight. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, that's the scale. Everybody ought to know how to play from do to do. There is nothing finer than a minor strain. It's the kind of melody gets a lot of sympathy. Accord in C is beautiful. I heard somebody say it. Accord in G is wonderful. According to the way you play it. Oh, Susanna, just on that old piano, my hands are reaching for those keys. It seems like many, many ages since we last turned those pages of our favorite melody. Oh, look, your father's here, and here's your mother, dear. It's time we had the parlor freshly painted. Time for us to get reacquainted. Oh, Susanna, take off that old bandana. Dust off the old piano tonight.
Oh, man.
Well, Jimmy, have you got any other ideas for Texaco Town?
Wait a minute. This is serious.
Why, what happened?
There's a policeman waiting in your office. He has a young fellow with him.
Well, I'll go in and see what it is. Come with me.
Right.
Hello, Your Honor.
Hello, officer. What's wrong?
This young fellow here, Frank Thompson, he turned in a false alarm.
A false alarm?
Yes, sir.
Come here, young man.
All right, but tell this guy to let go of my arm.
Let him go, officer. How old are you?
16. Any more questions?
16 and already a criminal?
A criminal? For turning in a false alarm?
Well, maybe you don't realize how serious your act was. Tell me, why did you do it?
Well, I don't know. It was just a joke.
A joke?
Well, me and the fellas were talking about how firemen don't do nothing all day. Just sit around taking it easy.
Yes, they just sit around. But remember, a fireman is chained to his post. But when he's at a fire, he doesn't lay down his tools when the clock strikes quitting time. He quits only when he's too exhausted. His wife is never sure he'll come home in time for supper. Sometimes he comes late. Sometimes he doesn't come home at all.
But look, I wouldn't do it again.
You know the old story of the boy who cried wolf just to fool his father? After two false alarms, the father didn't believe him anymore. But firemen answer every cry of wolf.
But you know I didn't do any harm.
Young man, not only in fires, but in floods, in earthquakes, in any major emergency, he's ready to risk his life. And for what? The average pay of a fireman is less than $30 a week. The fireman is always at your beck and call, but to call him just for fun, that's criminal.
Mayor Cantor, may I interrupt you?
Yes, officer, what is it?
Mrs. Jones is outside. She says she must see you right away.
Mrs. Jones? Why? What does she want?
Her husband was badly hurt. When his company was answering this false alarm, the fire truck skidded, sir. He's in the hospital.
Young fellow, did you hear that?
Yes, sir.
Come closer. You caused the injury of a fireman. You caused the damage of property, and you say you didn't do any harm.
But, gee, I didn't know that.
What shall I say to Mrs. Jones, Your Honor?
I wish I knew. Listen, officer, telephone the hospital and ask them to keep me posted on Jones.
Yes, sir.
Gee, I wish I'd known this before.
Sure. The result of your joke might cost the life of a man, and you, Frank, would be...
A murderer.
Yes.
Shall I send Mrs. Jones in, sir?
Let her come in. Hello, Mrs. Jones.
Mayor Cantor, I came to you because you know what happened.
I know, Mrs. Jones, and you mustn't worry. Your husband will be all right.
Oh, I wish I could believe that.
Of course. Henry is a strong man. He'll pull through.
He's such a good husband. Oh, he's got to live. He's got to live.
Hello. Yes. Mayor Cantor, it's the hospital.
Yes? Oh, that's wonderful, Doctor. I'm glad to hear that. Then he's out of danger. Fine.
Oh, thank heaven.
All right, Doctor. Goodbye. You see, Mrs. Jones, I was right. Now, do you believe me?
Oh, yes, Mayor. I'll go now. Goodbye. And thank you so much.
Oh, Officer, will you see Mrs. Jones home?
Yes, sir.
Gee, Mayor Cantor. Maybe I could do something to square myself.
Square yourself?
Why, yes, I could... Oh, but I forgot. I guess I'll be in jail.
Frank, technically you're guilty of several things. And you could be sent away for plenty of years. And so for destroying property and almost destroying one life, yours too would be ruined.
I guess I deserve it.
You do, but that isn't the best way. You're only 16, but you should have known better. I think you do now.
Oh, yes, sir.
I know you can never forget what happened tonight, so I give you a life sentence.
What?
You go free, but for the rest of your life, promise you'll remind others about what took place here.
Oh, I promise.
I only wish that everyone else, everyone who ever thought of turning in a false alarm, would stop and think how serious it is and would remember the many sacrifices made by firemen. The Bible says, greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for a friend. The fireman goes even further. Sometimes he lays down his life for a stranger.
I love to spend Sunday with you. As friend to friend, I'm sorry it's true. I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way too. Let's make a date for next Sunday night. I'm here to stay. 'Twill be my delight to sing again the things you want me to. I love to spend each Sunday with you. Good night.
Your neighborhood Texaco dealer invites you to listen to Eddie Cantor in Texaco Town next Sunday evening at the same time, coming to you direct from Hollywood, California. In the meantime, try Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. When you hear the siren bell, think of Texaco. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
PM BULOVA Bulova Watch Time, WABC, New York.
Eddie Cantor starring in Texaco Town from October 18th, 1936. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again soon for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.